The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself a Gun, a Sopranos podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Sopranos and talk about it. Thanks so much again for listening, everyone. Once again, 5 stars in a review. You guys are doing a pretty good job of doing it. Last week you actually listened to me and you gave it 5 stars in a review, and I read some of them. They were very good. There was one that said that the show was sexist. That hurt my feelings, but I still got 3 stars from that person. So yeah. If you're listening and you think the show is sexist,
I feel like I'm they said that just because Matt uses the word titties on occasion.
That's exactly what I said. I said, is it because I say The Sopranos is a show about titties and meat? Because it is a show. If I said breasts and meat, would it be better? I was just racking my brain thinking about it, and then I was like, maybe it's because I promoted it on a different show with a different audience, and I think we can be jarring for people who aren't used to, you know, how we keep it real, Vince.
Sure.
You know
what I mean? Yeah. No, they don't realize that when you say titties, you're just being sex positive. And
I'm being sex positive. The titties is, it's almost the medical name for them. Mm-hmm. You know, teats, right? So titties is like double that.
Mm-hmm.
And then titties. All right. Point is apologies all around to the one person who said that it was sexist, but gave us 3 stars anyways. But to everyone else who gave us 5 stars in a review, we thank you so much. We're very excited to have some new $8 patrons as well on the Pod Yourself a Shout Out tier. And finally, one more announcement before we get going. Next week, we are going to do something special. We're going to do a mailbag episode of Pod Yourself a Gun. You know, all the times we tell you to leave a voicemail and email us and whatnot. Well, we realize that we're very far behind in answering those, listening to those, reading those on the podcast. So we figured, you know, we would just go for it. Just have a whole episode just to talk to you, the fans out there, the listeners who have questions or have comments that they want read, you know, on the episode. So yeah, we're going to do that next week. And it's going to be a two-parter. One's going to go on the regular feed, and one is going to go for the patrons specifically. And it'll be great, won't it, Vince?
Yeah, I wish you'd do this at the end of the show, but yeah, you insist on doing it before we get to the content, but sure.
Because I want all of
the boring stuff out of the way at the beginning when the new people just start listening. That's great podcasting.
I feel like people know how to do the skip 15 seconds button. I mean, come on.
I don't want to turn into Mark Maron where it's like every week you're like, well, how many minutes do I have to skip this week? Is it 7? Is it 10? Maybe it's 13 and a half.
okay, but most podcasts, most real podcasts, have like 20 minutes of someone talking about Sherry's Berries.
Sure,
all right?
That's true.
We or, don't do that here.
Or Best Fiends.
Or Best Fiends.
Don't ever check out Best Fiends. They must have just an incredible advertising budget for that show. That
unbelievable
game that no one,
advertising. No one on Earth has ever played it. And that's the thing. Even if you do play it, you don't talk about the phone games that you're playing with your friends. It's such a weird thing. I mean, anyways, don't download Best Fiends, but do become an $8 patron, patreon.com/frogcast. Pod yourself a shout out tier. And also, we're doing a mailbag episode. It's going to be great. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, our guest this week to talk about season 4, episode 11, Calling Our Cars. Calling All Cars, you have seen him on The Dangerous World of Comedy on Netflix. He's a good friend of ours. Ladies and gentlemen, please, a huge round of applause for Johan Miranda. Hey.
Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to talk about this particular episode. It's a short episode, 45 minutes or something. I like it when they keep it short. Short and sweet.
Yeah, I agree with that. No. It's definitely is it the shortest episode of Sopranos out there? I think it might be. But it's also it really proves that any show longer than 30 minutes is just trying to do art. And I feel like, you know, what's the point of that? You could wrap up any good show in 30 minutes, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I think 40-41, that's a good length for a show to be.
Yeah. 41 is fine too, but let's be honest. 30 minutes, one, you can get it all. Just knock it all out, you know? You don't need like 15 minutes of fucking Tony just looking at a painting. I get it. He's sad, you know? You don't need all that shit. But Johan, thank you for coming on. So, are you a fan of The Sopranos?
Yeah, I'm a fan. I'm a new fan. I actually started watching. I first watched the series during the second lockdown in LA, which was December and January.
Yeah. So you knocked it all out in what, like 2 months?
Yeah, I was having a hard time with the second lockdown. It was really like so mentally tough on me. So I was like, I'm gonna use this. This is the time to pull this. Use the Sopranos. And yeah, for those 2 months, I was just like mentally in Northern New Jersey, just dissociating.
Your body was in Southern California, but your mind was in the Pine Barrens looking for the Russian.
Yeah, out in front of Satrials, having an espresso.
Yeah. Just sad as shit.
Saying hi to your commendatory.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's that seems to be a running theme of people who kind of like used the lockdown as a way to like catch up with all of the best shows that ever mm-hmm. existed. And I'm glad you chose the Sopranos. Mm-hmm. So have you finished it?
I finished it. Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Good, because we're going to spoil everything.
No spoilers on this show, except for we do spoilers sometimes. But if you're listening to this and it's your first time, don't worry about it. We don't really spoil anything. We keep it light. Yeah, no, we don't fucking do it.
Also, lighten up. Well, you might hear a plot point a few episodes ahead of time. Who cares? You're going to watch it anyway. It doesn't matter if you know that. It's still going to be fun to watch.
Well, this show had the most spoiled ending of all time. I mean, I knew about the end. It's like, it was because it was like a whole month of people.
Yeah, of people just of the,
yeah,
being fucking pissed. I was super pissed off at the ending. I fucking... I remember like literally just Googling HBO and trying to find the numbers of people who worked there.
Wow.
And I left messages on people's answering machines that was a bullshit ending.
Manager can you speak to?
I know. I went full Karen. I was full Karen about the ending. And it's not really that it matters. That's the whole thing about spoilers. Like a lot of time people act like everything is a fucking M. Night Shyamalan movie. Like no. And spoilers don't even matter.
You're an adult.
The movies.
It's not like a fucking Jack in the. It's not like a fucking. It's not a. I don't know what it is. It's not a. It's not a thing that can be spoiled. Like if you hear about a plot point, it's fine. Yeah. Like you're. Yeah. That's not the whole. That's not the point of the show. Like the point is,
especially yeah. with mob stories, it's like it's either you're gonna die or go to jail. What do you think is gonna happen?
Yeah, right. It's like imagine being in the mafia and worrying about spoilers. So you know, there's only three ways this ends up: jails, institutions, well, and
as,
death.
As John Travolta, as John Gotti in the movie Gotti put it, you know, guys like me, we either end up dead or in jail. Me, I done both.
I did both of them. I'm from the mafia. I fucking love that movie.
greatest bad movie. That's like if everybody who listens to this podcast should go watch the movie Gotti, because it's like if one of the characters in The Sopranos tried to make a mob movie. I'm mm-hmm. convinced it's like worse than if Christopher got his movie about I Must Be Loyal to My Capo. Like if he actually got that produced yeah. and made, it would be better than the movie Gotti.
Yeah, no, I mean, it really was. As I was watching it, I was just thinking to myself, this is E from Entourage riding Cleaver. And and but they actually did make it into a movie. So it's pretty incredible. And, you know, good for him for making such a wonderful film.
It's nice when one of the Pussy Posse succeeds, I always say.
I love it when that Pussy Posse succeeds, dude. It's who's the least... who's gotten the least pussy
objectionable? Well, I mean, there's, I don't know. I would say Ethan Suplee because he's, you know, he's a bigger guy, but I feel like he fucks more than E from Entourage.
Yeah. 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 I don't even know everyone in the Pussy Posse.
I don't either.
More of a David Blaine guy myself.
Which guy?
The magician.
Oh, yeah. is he in the Pussy Posse too?
I thought he was.
I would love it if David, if they, it was like Leonardo DiCaprio, E from Entourage, and David Blaine hanging out. David Blaine would magically get all the pussy. I could very much see that. But this is not a podcast about the Pussy Posse, although that's a good idea. Let's save that one for later.
Table that.
Let's table Pussy Posse podcast. And for now, continue doing this podcast, which is Pod Yourself a Gun. And before we get started, we must first play the theme song. Pod. Your mom always said you'd be the chosen. Pod. Pod. Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast. All right, ladies and gentlemen, and everybody else, this is Pod Yourself a Gun, and this episode we are talking about is from season 4 of The Sopranos, episode 11. Calling All Cars. Now, this episode premiered November 24th, 2002. And Vince, could you break us off a little piece of that synopsis?
Oh, I sure can. Good. As soon as I scroll down to it. Tony's dreams seem to tell him where his life is headed, but he still feels as though he's out of control.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, that is some of what happens. But Vince, what was going on at the time that this episode came out?
Oh, I think what you're saying, Matt, is that you know, before we talk about any art, we should talk about the cultural context in which it was created.
Yes.
That is what you're saying, right?
What I've said.
Just checking. And for that, we have the Remember When machine. Walk.
Remember when it's the lowest form of conversation.
That's right. We're going all the way back 20 years-ish, right? I don't know. November 24th.
A while ago.
Yeah, November 24th, 2002 is the year this episode, the day that this episode came out. That was... it was actually the week that Michael Jackson famously dangled his child blanket over the edge of the balcony.
Good week, dude. That was an amazing week. That is.
I feel like, yes. You know, he got a lot of shit for endangering his child, but it's like, it's not like he dropped the kid. He probably wasn't going to drop the kid. I feel like he didn't get enough shit for naming his son Blanket.
Yeah, it was actually a smart thing to do. It was a way to get us to forget that the kid's name was Blanket.
That did way more damage to
Daniel. Yeah, yeah. There, you know, we just skipped over Blanket and went straight to, why did you dangle your kid off of the roof? At the same time, though, like, hey, you didn't drop it. You're
his
right.
name actually isn't, like, his real name isn't Blanket. It's like Prince Michael or some shit. But but his, like, he called him Blanket. That was his nickname. And it's it really...
Fucking why?
I think it's just like, it goes to show you that Michael Jackson had, like, the mind of a very small child where, like, you know, it's just like nicknaming your dog Doghouse or you know, it's like he sees the kid and it's wrapped in a blanket, so he named it Blanket. It's a really easy nickname, I guess.
No, I get it, but I mean, it's just like, you know, why did, I don't know. I guess I don't get it, but.
Dude, my child, Blanket, crib, and diaper.
Yeah, and this is my child, trash can and blender. I don't know why he's blending
a child. He's just seeing inanimate objects in the house and using it to name things after.
Oh, why name the kid at all?
You know? So I try to pick stories where, like, you know, a few are relevant to today and a few are anachronisms of the time. I think the Michael Jackson story is a very good example of that. The headline in the New York Post is, and this has got to be like Pulitzer worthy New York Post headline writing. Smacko Jacko knows no shame. And nose is like you're the nose on your face, not like...
No, yeah, yeah, I figure.
Okay, yeah. And this is the article. Can someone...
Smacko? Why Smacko?
Well, wait till you get to the lead, because it's even better.
Oh.
Can someone explain why that nose-dropping, shape-shifting, child-abusing wacko hasn't gotten good and smackoed?
Oh, that's why Smacko.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Not a week after Michael Jackson made his all projectile vomit when his nose flew off in court, we're faced with his blatant, flagrant, mocking display of child abuse.
This is so crazy. I forgot, like, newspapers around that. Like, maybe it's just the New York Post, but this is like proto-blogging, where they're just like, this is Perez Hilton if he was in print.
Oh, yeah. 100%. Like, that didn't come from nowhere.
Oh, yeah.
First, he dangled the baby off a balcony. Then the next day, he made his other kids go out looking as freakish as their dad with veils on their faces like they're in Taliban for tots.
What the fuck, dude?
So, like, but we got proto mask shaming. That was the first example.
And like I love that they just couldn't help, but they had to find a way to sneak in some Islamophobia into there.
Yeah.
Just be like, they got towels on their head, just like the people America's fighting. Just fucking why?
Yeah. We're still in the very long, drawn out lead up to the Iraq war. I think it's about to happen. It had to happen. I mean, goddamn.
They're taking their goddamn time.
This entire season has been the buildup to the Iraq war. And, whew. So on that note, we have a headline about Bush welcoming new states to NATO. President Bush, speaking in Bucharest, welcomed Romanians into the NATO alliance and the campaign against terrorism.
Romanians finally in NATO.
About time. We need all that Romanian strength that they provide.
We can use their gypsy tears for make a smart bomb.
So this is when the U.S. is still like building the Great Coalition.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah. We're getting all our homies together. Gambia, Namibia, fucking Romania, you know, Herzegovina, just all the homies. All my homies hate Iraq.
He said their experience under communism equipped them to understand the dangers posed by Saddam Hussein. Sure.
Wow.
You value freedom because you have lived without it. You know the difference between good and evil because you've seen the face of evil. The people of Romania know that dictators must never be appeased or ignored. They must be opposed. Before, these are all things that Bush said in the speech. Before a much smaller crowd in City Hall Square in Vilnius, which is in Lithuania, Mr. Bush, which is also part of NATO now, Mr. Bush compared the threat from today's terrorists to the Nazis and communists who controlled much of Europe for parts of the 20th century. Like the Nazis and the communists, Mr. Bush said, the terrorists seek to end lives and control all life. Mr. Bush told the Lithuanians that we must be willing to stand in the face of evil, to have courage to always face danger.
Yeah, dude, stand right in evil's face and say, hey, evil, your face is ugly.
Hey,
and your
evil.
Nose is flying off in court.
You're fired. Now hey, give evil. Us your oil.
Oh, fuck, man. We really, you know, it felt so much faster as it was happening.
There's still a year left till the Iraq war starts.
I know. It's taking fucking forever. Every week we do this podcast, and every week I was like, still they're doing this. Still, it took so... You'd figure that that would be a sign that maybe this war is not going to go well when every major country is just like, nah, I don't know, dude.
Yeah. This seems like a bad idea, bro. I don't know.
Yeah. Except my for favorite, like... Yeah.
My favorite early 2000s memory of this whole time is... The MTV Real World season that happened around this time. It's when Bush, I think, was first, I think when they first started ascending, like attacking Iraq, and Bush gave the whole speech about how why we need to be in Iraq. And then they did the confessionals with every cast member, like what they what their thoughts are. Each of them one by one were like, look, I don't like war, but I understand we have to defend our freedoms.
Look, one by one. I don't know anything about war. Mostly I just hook up with my roommates in the hot tub. But if I know anything, it's that we can't let the smoking gun be a mushroom cloud.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
If the glove don't fit, you must acquit. Freedom isn't free. Do you remember what season that was, Johan?
I don't know. I don't remember which. I don't remember. Yeah, what year, what or where they were. But I mean, I don't know. People forget.
It was Kabul. They had already done a Real World Afghanistan, and they're like, I think we're ready for another war.
I was an intern on the Real World San Diego. I'm trying to remember if that was the one.
Man, that to me is a whole other podcast too, where you just rewatch the Real World season when we're going to Iraq.
Current events through the lens of Real World. That'd be a good documentary. So
yeah,
we'll table that one also. In the meantime, we got other foreshadowing of future events. This was 2002, at least, you know, 5.5 to 6 years before the financial meltdown. But already there were signs. This is from the New York Times. Easy credit and hard times bring foreclosures. 68% of all American families own homes, the most ever, and a sizable increase. But in another another aftershock of the binging 1990s, merchants of the dream have become its morticians. More mortgages than ever are being foreclosed and more homes repossessed.
Ah, big deal. What's the worst that could happen, Vince?
Yeah, well, I don't know. Michael Jackson could drop his baby on the concrete on accident. That'd be pretty bad, right?
No, that would suck, dude.
No more blanket.
So quick, someone get a blanket to cover the body of blanket.
I would love to see the New York Post headline on that. Like,
wet blanket. Sorry to be a wet blanket, but Michael Wacko Jacko went smacko all over the side wacko. Yep, something like that.
Some of the books, I forgot to look up the, you know, the bestseller list when I usually do this, but, some of the books on the bestseller list this week were Journals, by Kurt Cobain.
Oh fuck. I forgot about, I think I got that as like a birthday present, and I remember opening it up and being like, I like this person. Why am I reading his diary?
Right.
It just felt so voyeuristic. And I was like, this is maybe she did kill him. Like, I was like, Courtney could have killed him. I mean, to do this. Come on, man.
I mean, and they were surprised when you started doing heroin after they bought you that as a birthday present.
That was the beginning.
Number two, a nonfiction was Leadership by Rudolph Giuliani with Ken Kirsten.
Love it.
Not even a year. Yeah. I mean, barely a year after 9/11, he's already written a book about how he did a good job during it.
Yeah, he's like you know, Cuomo.
The OG.
The OG, dude.
He laid out the blueprint, you know.
Yeah.
Become an endeared Italian leader.
Yeah.
Release the book.
Yeah. Just happened to be in office when a lot of people in New York die, and then write a book about how, hey, I didn't die. And then fucking people will think you're doing leadership. It's great.
I was strong in the face of all the people dying. yeah, there's some fiction ones, but I don't really care. It's like The Lovely Bones. There's a Danielle Steele on there. There's a Janet Ivanovich. Movies. Top movies were Die Another Day, new James Bond movie, Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, and Friday After Next, which I believe they had a scene of Ice Cube writing in Straight Outta Compton. That was my favorite part where
they was that him writing Friday After Next? No, he was writing Friday.
And he said bye, Felicia, and it was exciting for everybody. Everybody likes the callback.
Everyone loves it.
Songs same as last week: "Lose Yourself," Eminem; "You Know You're Right" by Nirvana, and that's been the Remember When machine.
All right, so that is the cultural context for what was happening while this episode was airing. We got a little bit of synopsis there from IMDb. I have about a B stories, but I here's the thing: I feel after last week, I did such a powerful Bada B stories that I didn't have time to do a good one this week. So apologies up front to everyone who's like, oh, I wonder what's next. Nothing good. This is an old school Bada B stories. Real quick, here are the Bada B stories. Bobby buries a cake up. Tony has a dream before he wakes up. AJ likes to break stuff. Vic the appraiser gets shaked up. Janice scares the kids with a fake up account. And Melfi and Tony break up. All right. That's how it used to be, Vince. That's how I used to do all of them. They used to just rhyme. I didn't used to put so much fucking effort into this goddamn podcast. And shit was easier back then. It was more fun. General thoughts on this episode, Vince.
Oh, you're asking me.
What do
me,
you think?
Not our guest.
Oh, well, yeah. I guess I should get general thoughts on the episode, Johan. What'd you think?
I think the one who gets the character that does the most impact is, for me, is Janice. Jesus Christ. Yes. Like, still. Yes. Oh, my God. I mean, we'll get into it, but.
This is a Janice episode for sure.
General thought was that it's kind of a bad episode except for the Janice storyline, which is really good. And so
I wouldn't consider it a bad episode. I thought it was to me, it is that perfectly good kind of like standard Sopranos episode where you get a lot of Tony kind of like, you get into the nuts and bolts of the mafia, like, not just the scam, but like the drama between the crews, you know, between
the
New York family
and
the petty grievances. Yeah. You know, this is Tony's basically dealing with like some workplace drama in the midst of also dealing with his home life vis-a-vis Melfi getting all fucked up, you know, and so it's like, to me, it's like you've got a little bit of everything. It's a sampler platter of Sopranos in this episode. You got a little bit of, you got a like a strong Melfi storyline. You got a strong, this is what the mafia
strong.
Does. I thought this was good. This was my favorite Melfi. I say that because this is the first time it felt like even the writers of the Sopranos were like, this premise is stale.
Right.
We should get the fuck out of this. Because this is the episode in which Tony and Melfi break up. Now, this isn't their first breakup. They've had blow ups before, but this is the first one that's born sheerly out of like exhaustion for the format of the show.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that a lot.
Speaking of like the Iraq War 10 years in, like, what are we doing? Like,
yeah, exactly.
They needed
we
to
painted
have a,
ourselves into a corner and we needed a therapy
surge.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think the reason that, I mean, to me, it's like sports, you know, there's teams that have a rebuilding year after all their stars retire or whatever. I mean, this is coming on the heels of two or three really like eventful episodes where we're like, we lose big characters and big things happen. And now they're kind of having to start new storylines in this one a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I just feel like a lot of most Sopranos episodes, really, like when characters are doing something, it feels like, oh, that's perfect. That's exactly what that person would do. Whereas like in right. this episode, other than the Janna storyline, which is great, it feels a lot like it's more just like the writers kind of being like, well, we need to give them something to do for these next few episodes. Like they don't necessarily feel like strictly character driven decisions, I guess.
True. It's interesting because The Sopranos does kind of, I would say, toe the line between a drama and a sitcom, and the show veers so much into sitcom territory so often in terms of like decisions being 100% like character driven and then putting the, you know, characters into awful situations. Like, to me, that's the difference between like a drama and a sitcom. Is like, it's like the sitcom is really like a super defined character, super I guess like their idiosyncrasies completely dictate
Samantha
where the story
is
goes.
The slut. Yes, what's her face is the lawyer.
Yeah, yeah. Miranda, by the way. I mean, what's her face? Come on. You don't know Sex and the City? It's the greatest sitcom of all time. But yeah, so this episode, you don't get much in terms of, I guess, like the kind of character driven storylines outside of Janice. Although I will say, Tony in this episode, I think, does break up with Melfi because Svetlana like totally took his balls from him. Mm-hmm. Which I love. Yeah. But let's start with the our favorite storyline, Bobby and Janice. So we start out with, you see Bobby, I guess he's at his daughter's soccer game or something like that. And
I think it was softball, but yeah, maybe.
Or softball, yeah. It's some sports game.
Yeah.
And
They're playing sports ball.
I don't like sports. Am I interesting? So he's at the softball game, and his daughter goes into their car and sees there is a cake sitting there. And I think it says, what does it say? Happy anniversary, babe, or something like I miss you, dead wife, or bro, I'm so sad right now. This sucks.
I don't remember, but yeah, something.
Yeah, it's something sweet. Yeah.
It says something nice. And then next you see Bobby at Karen's grave talking to her, burying a cake, which
yeah.
I gotta say, is the funniest thing for a 300-pound man to do.
I feel like it was a missed opportunity visually of just showing him digging.
Yeah.
Right.
You want to see him sweating and like profusely sweating while he's like, you know, taking a gardening hoe or whatever to fucking to bury a whole ass cake.
I mean, they took like a overused trope, which is whenever characters talk to their loved ones at the gravesite. I don't know anyone who does this, by the way. Like, this is a weird
I'm sure thing. Someone does it.
Maybe. I've seen it 100 times in movies and never once in real life. So I kind of feel like it's a little bit overused.
Well, how much time are you spending at fucking, you know, at gravesites, dude?
Yeah, exactly. That's my whole point. But yeah, they took it and they made it interesting because they're like, well, what if he buried a cake under the ground like a fucking psychopath? Also, wouldn't there be like a groundskeeper being like, hey, why you dig him up on my grass?
Hey, what do you do? I told you once, I told you again, no more berry at the cake.
I just put a new sod last week.
No, it's a strange thing to do, but it's like, you know, it's also, I don't know, it fits very much into Bobby's character to be someone who, because he's incredibly sad and he's an incredibly sweet person, and motherfucker loves cake.
And really like melodramatic in kind of an obnoxious way. Like, he tries to relate to other people and they appreciate how sweet he is, but they're also like, all right, man, give it a fucking rest, would you?
Yeah. there's a level of sadness that he projects in this period that I can imagine that you don't have to be a sociopath like Janis Soprano to find a little bit like, it's getting kind of old, dude.
Yeah. You know? Like, yeah.
But then again,
his wife, fair, what's the I mean, not to get ahead in the story, what's the baked ziti?
Yeah, Karen Ziti.
Yeah, Karen Ziti.
Her last ziti.
That's the one thing I wondered is like, it was in the fridge for what? For how long was it in the fridge? Because I looked it up. I looked up frozen ziti, how long it could like stay good. It's 2 months.
Oh, wow.
2 months? So I don't know. Like,
if that's the case, this guy's, I don't know. To defend Bobby here.
Yeah.
14 years of marriage, 2 months. Come on.
Yeah. He's
let him bury his cake.
Let him bury his cake. Let him grieve a bit.
Sometimes you want to have your cake and bury it too, you know? Like, you gotta, it's just a weird grief move, but I guess, all right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay with it. I feel like it adds a lot to Bobby's character, and it falls in line with who he is. Of course, Janis is completely distraught by this whole thing because her thinking is she's dead. Uh-huh. I'm trying to smash and fucking, you know, get into this mafia life without having to...
We haven't do anything. Like, this is the first time we hear that they're not actually having sex, you know, like they're she has a conversation with Carm that we learn that they're still platonic. She says, I'm stuck at platonic, which was a surprise to me. I thought they'd already been fucking.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're stuck at platonic and she's doing everything she can to fucking get him interested in that good. But like she, you know, the only way she knows how to do it is by being the weirdest, most fucking manipulative psychopath that she can be. And so our first taste of Janis in this episode is fantastic. She gets takeout from Outback Steakhouse,
which she thinks is like a really nice thing to do.
Oh,
like
this was,
Besides, we're $30 alone. Come on.
Yes. Yeah. I have a clip of that whole scene.
I saw on CNBC that Outback's profitability is.
Excuse me.
Dan, sit and eat. It's a sin to waste good food. The kids are fed.
Thank you.
Bobby, what did you do with the cake today?
Cake?
Your daughter says you saw it in the back of your car. She told me about it when I picked her up from practice.
One thing I noticed this episode, I don't know if this is always true for her, but Janice's consonants are like mushier than ever. And like she kind of sounds like what an opiate addict sounds like. Like, I mean... Mm. East Coast is they got the mushy consonants in general going on, but like this especially, it reminded me when Christopher was like, I didn't. When he was getting accused of shooting
I didn't notice that at all, but you are also very sensitive to mouth sounds.
I am, yeah.
Yes.
I took it to Karen's grave. I buried it. Today was our anniversary.
I wish you would have told me about it before I picked up the steaks from Outback. Besides alone, we're over $30. Believe me, Bobby, I know. I lost both my parents. It's very easy for people to give facile advice. Suck it up, move on, etc. I'm not going to tell you that. Grieving is a process. Sometimes courage isn't a value.
Outback Steakhouse. No rules, just right. Outback Steakhouse. No rules, just right.
Yeah, I feel like that's like the classic obnoxious person move is that they try to commiserate with whatever you're feeling by bringing up something that happened to them that's not even close to the same thing.
Well, she literally just tried to bring it up by saying, you know, I know what you're going through. Both of my parents died, which is like, oh, that is very different. Like
that last line, I don't know if you know, like, the last line she says, courage is not always a virtue.
Yes. Yeah, she says right after that. Yeah,
it's good that you're not being a man right now. I like it. I think that's what you should do is to be.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, being a little pussy ass bitch is healthy for the grieving process.
I love it that you're not fucking me. Like that when your dick doesn't get hard, it's exactly what you should be doing right now. And you should not listen to anyone else who says that you're less than a man, that you are a little boy with a little baby dick.
Yeah, who am I to tell you that you're being a bitch? It's just so she's so amazing at backhandedness.
Yeah,
Sorry, go ahead.
What I was wondering is, did she order the Outback Steakhouse knowing it was the anniversary?
That's a great question.
I'm like so convinced. Like she's like the most manipulative. I could see it.
Yes, I could totally see it.
The other explanation is she just did it for what reason? Because she's a good person. I don't buy
it. Because
she wanted a Bloomin' Onion and she probably used Bobby's money to buy it. That's what I would think.
Yeah.
And then she saw an Outback commercial and she thought, fuck, that looks good. I'm going to go buy it with Bobby's money and then I'm going to come back home and act like I am like Mother Teresa for bringing home the steak that I wanted from TV.
Yeah. But I mean, seeing her, I think because she starts out the scene randomly.
Honey, just decided I wanted Australian food tonight. Who else was in the mood for Australian?
I mean, she said she saw something on CNBC about Outback's profitability, which is also, I think, an entirely it's an entirely plausible explanation for her being hungry for Outback was that she saw them. You know, she's random. She's high as shit watching some random shit on TV. Someone talks about Outback's profitability and she's just like, oh, Bloomin' Onion would be so good right now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's possible. But I do like the idea that she knew it was the anniversary. And to her, Outback Steakhouse is like, that's a very special steak night that she's going to have with her new man, you know.
Either way, I mean, Outback is all about atmosphere. I mean, have you?
That's true. You know, you don't get takeout from Outback. You fucking, you go there and you eat it.
Yeah,
and
they're like, when you're here, no rules, just right. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah, rules, just right, Outback Steakhouse. Yeah, hell yeah, dude. Those are the fucking...
Like ordering like pizza from Chuck E. Cheese. Like you're super happy. Right.
I got takeout from Dave and Buster's. They have really good wings.
Exactly. A theme restaurant that you get takeout from is maybe the peak trashiest thing you can do.
I got some food from Dick's Last Resort. They wrote down some disses that I can use on my family.
Exactly. They called me a fat fuck piece of shit. So that was nice.
Have you ever been to that place?
Yeah, I have, and it was awful. I don't know why people do it. It's terrible.
I assume the roasts have a limit on how mean they would get with it.
No, the worst thing is they didn't even roast me. They just seemed bummed to be there. And that was like the bit that she was doing. And I was like, this is too believable. I already feel bad every time I get waited on. Like, I don't need someone doing a character where they're mad about it. Cause I'm like, is this a character? I'd be mad. You know, fucking, that's a shit job. Dick's Last Resort is. People who work in service, you're all heroes. So later on, we get some insight into what Bobby's kids are going through. And just like children, they are mostly scared of ghosts, which I think is, I don't know, it's a really charming way to kind of to kind of get into what the kids are feeling. You know, they're clearly, obviously, they're sad about their mom being dead. They're sad watching, you know, fucking their dad be depressed and miserable.
They went extremely sitcom-y with this one, I'll say.
Oh, I loved it.
His daughter mentioned that some kid named Nikki told her that, like, her mom's going to haunt her. Who is this monster?
I know, who the fuck does that? That's so insane. But, you know, it's like... You know, maybe that is what that's the first thing kids talk about after, you know, someone close to them dies is they're like, oh, shit, are they going to be a ghost now?
Yeah, you don't have the empathy to be like, oh, I'm so sorry that happened to you. You immediately move to, oh, shit, dude, she's a ghost. She's going to haunt your house forever now.
Yeah, that's what ghosts do. and it's very sweet seeing, you know, a Bobby Jr. trying his best to, like, you know, be the man of the house, because he's essentially, that's what he is now. He's the grown up, or the man of the house.
Great actor, because, that kid. I normally hate child actors, but that kid's fantastic.
Yeah, I hate child actors as well, and he is very, very good at it.
In fact, think only fat kids should be allowed to be child actors.
Yeah, that's fair. It's because they, I don't know what it is. It's they just, there's just something to these kids. Just in The Sopranos, they do great jobs with child actors.
Yeah, even when he was doing his racist Asian impression, I was like, oh, this kid's adorable.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So
I think part of the reason that I feel like they probably just like a lot of Sopranos supporting characters, they just recruited from like the surrounding area instead of trying to find actual child actors. Because I think, like, one of the worst things that a child actor can have is acting experience. It's like,
yes, I completely agree.
That definitely makes them, like, bad at looking like
the
a real
worst
kid.
Thing a child actor can have is a reel and an agent, because that means that this is something they're trying to do. And instead, honestly, the government should make a program in which kids are just recruited to be child actors, so that, and you only get one job ever, and that's
it. It's like a mandatory military service, like, yes, in Korea, exactly, or whatever. Like, you have to do two years as a child actor. Like, you can get drafted at any age between, like, 4 and 16 or whatever. And then after that, you can choose to sign up voluntarily.
And if you're a draft dodger, you have to go to some sort of adorable kids jail. that'll be, you know, that'll be cute, like a it's like, instead of bars, it's like plush. Anyways, so it's a Chuck E. Cheese, it's a ball pit with bars and chains.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage,
all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So, Janice is, goes over to, Carm's and complains about what's going on with him and Bobby. And, Carmella decides, you know, to have Bobby and the kids over, for their Sunday dinner. And,
is Carmella trying to help Janice smash, or what is her purpose here?
I think so. I think that Carmella, because like she's telling Carmella straight up, like we haven't even had sex yet. So I think Carmella is less about helping her smash, more about like helping Bobby through a hard time. That would be my guess.
I feel like the best way to
probably would help Carmella just to have someone to keep Janice. Like everyone's just like just whatever, just keep Janice busy. You right. know?
Yeah,
and out of that.
And I think in general, Carmella sees it as a good fit in terms of like, you know, Janice needs to be with somebody sweet who can like stand her. At least that's what Carmella thinks, because Carmella doesn't know the
depth.
But
then you curse that good person with this horrible sociopath.
Yeah, it is strange. It is strange. But, you know, Carmella is, you know, I don't know if she knows the depths of the, you know, sociopathy of Janice Soprano.
Outback Steakhouse and all that.
No, yeah, they don't know.
Doesn't know how much money she spent on sides, that's for sure.
Yeah, and the profitability of Outback Steakhouse through the roof. But I have a clip of Janice and Carm.
Well, I'm sure she was as good as gold, but he's developing a psychosis. Her clothes are still in the closet. And yesterday, he bought her a cake for their anniversary, and he buried it at her grave. What?
He bought her a cake.
Brother.
I got a very stuffed up nose this episode.
A grave? God forbid that I should say something, because then I would be perceived as a harpy coming between him and his dead, idealized wife.
Listen, you. Don't make any plans for Sunday. Baccalieri's are coming over. I want you to make those kids feel welcome.
Bobby Jr.? That could take 11.
I don't ask you to do chore one around here. You can go without seeing Devin and your friends for one night.
Yeah, well, we're supposed to study. But I guess you don't care about that.
Cut my life into pieces. This is my last resort. Suffocation.
Anyways,
I love that AJ is wearing an Echo t-shirt in this scene.
Yes,
it really took me back. I was like, we're in the early 2000s.
Yes, yeah. AJ was just like, oh, he's such a perfect vehicle for who I was at the time, and I'm just like, God, he's cool. He's a cool kid.
So, yeah, and, like my problem with this episode in general, like I buy AJ putting Bobby Jr. in the garage, because that's like a small buildup, great cruelty prank. Whereas like this episode, it feels like AJ's pulling pranks that require like theatricality and creativity on the level that I just don't really buy that AJ possesses.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
he's burning a lot of calories. Like
he's being forced to play with Bobby,
right?
You know?
And I don't it makes sense that he would be mean to this kid and constantly trying to one up him and shit. But just the effort and creativity that he puts into playing pranks on this kid doesn't like strike me as like a very AJ thing. Just because, you know, this is the guy who gets his mom The Matrix on DVD for her birthday. Like, what is like whatever is like the least amount of calories burnt for the most payoff for AJ is like the things that he's gonna do. And I don't know, the whole seance felt like, no, this is something that like some like theater kid who has like a lot of you know, ideas and creativity about life would do.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just kind of like, I look at it as he's trying to impress Devin a little bit. Like, he's going over the top because Devin is there. And he's
dumb, but is he dumb enough to think that his girlfriend's going to be impressed with him torturing an 11-year-old?
Yes, because that's who he is. he's like, I've gotten this far by being myself. Why stop now? You know, I feel like it's not too far off from who he is to torture an 11-year-old. But what I love about seeing Bobby Jr. In this episode interact with AJ is that Bobby Jr. has got to be the only person in The Sopranos who looks at AJ and goes, man, that guy's cool.
Right.
Like, he thinks he's fucking hilarious.
Well, I mean, I think
and awesome.
There's a certain stage of childhood where like the entire goal is to like be mean to your parents and not listen to adults. So in order to become an adult, you have to stop seeing them as like authority figures. And I think Bobby is like, well, who's meaner to his own parents than AJ?
Yeah,
like when AJ did that, racist Asian joke and joined him on it, and then Bobby Senior was like, how would you like it if the Orientals?
I have a clip of that of that scene. It's called Stop Asian Hate.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, no cactus for me.
Cactus.
You're not Italian if you don't like artichokes.
So what, Mike Piazza eats nothing but artichokes? I mean, that's dicked up.
All right.
I like rice. Maybe I'm Chinese. so, Papa-san.
Hey. Well, isn't that Japanese anyway?
He doesn't know.
Yeah.
AJ.
You too, Bobby. How'd you like if little Oriental kids were making fun of you?
What I don't like in the early 2000s, was Oriental considered like the polite term for Asian Americans, or is Bobby Senior just like, dumb?
No, it was. I mean, that was. I think we learned that you were supposed to say Asian like in the mid to late 90s, but
yeah,
older people definitely all. Anyone over like 45 probably still said Oriental at that point.
Yeah, no, they did that for the bit 100%.
Yeah.
Where they were like, you know, how would you like it if a little Oriental kid, like immediately using the fucking the wrong word. But also, you know, the sentiment there being very sweet and very Bobby. yeah. But yeah, the seance, that's it, this whole
it was a big, you know, swing on the writer's part, I'll say that. That was like a big contrivance.
Yeah, well, yeah, how old is AJ supposed to be at this point?
I think he's like 16. I think he's like not.
I agree. Once you're 16, you have a girlfriend. Like, or why would you care about an 11-year-old?
Yeah,
like, yeah, I agree. I
see.
He's burning a lot of calories to not make out with Devin Pillsbury.
Well, he can't make out with Devin Pillsbury. He's got these kids to look after, and he wants to. And I think we're overlooking the fact that there is like something. That there is a cruelty that a lot of 16-year-olds have towards younger kids.
I believe the cruelty. I just think it's a lazy cruelty. Like, locking him in the garage is a perfect AJ move because it's cruelty, true, but it's also lazy. Whereas this is a very, like, theatrical calorie.
No, yeah, he had to get a sponge wet to do this bit. Like, it's a lot of, like, he had to leave
the
room.
Well, he's doing improv about the wave and blah, 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 and there's an old man. Like, he's telling a story like a goddamn, he's on Prairie Home Companion or some shit in there.
It's badass though, and I also have a clip of the seance.
We call that ZD Home Companion.
What's that? How come he's only talking to you?
Because I'm the oldest and closest to the afterlife.
Shh.
You're a sea captain? Captain Jacobus? What? He says it's a terrible storm. It's raining where you are? Waves are smashing against the boat? Ah!
Is that Slipknot or Korn?
No, dude, that's Mudvayne.
Oh, damn it. I knew it was one of those three.
Mudvayne rules, dude.
To your point, Vince, like, yeah, he has like a wet sponge ready
yeah.
for this. Like, yeah. it does feel a little theater kid kind of like production.
He's done a lot of pre-production on this whole thing. And I don't think AJ goes that far for a bit. Like, I buy him like making Asian jokes about rice because that's the amount of effort that he would put in.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, yes, you guys are not wrong that this is definitely. They've got him doing a little bit too much planning to be consistent with the character, but I have to say I do just love watching I love watching AJ be a little scumbag, and even you know, like, despite all the effort that he put into it, it's a great prank. I mean, you know, you got to give him credit for creativity, and I say, you know, good for him. Also, he's a piece of shit. I mean, what a horrible human being.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there was this thing, though, I think with kids, I remember being a lot more blasé about death when I was a kid.
Sure.
Like, you know, when people like it was a serious thing, but it was also like everyone just waiting to see who was going to make the first joke. Mm-hmm. And then once that happened, it was like, OK, that's cool. It's not real anymore. Now it's just a fun joke between me and my friends. So I do kind of. You know, I buy kids at school asking,
sure.
Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, saying like, oh, yeah, your mom's going to turn into a ghost and haunt your room.
Yeah, I believe that part. But I will say about this storyline, it does lead into Janice, you know, buying, first of all, like catfishing Bobby Jr. through AOL.
Unbelievable.
Through AOL Messenger and hiding a goddamn Ouija board in his dresser. And like the thing I wrote down while this was happening was that Janice has like spiritual Munchausen's disease. You know, like Munchausen's by proxy, where like the mom is like gradually like poisoning her daughter so that she can get the attention. This is like that, except like Janice is trying to make sure everyone around her is like mentally sick enough to like need her.
It really is just what it's gaslighting. It's like, and I hate that we use the term over and over and over again, you know, recently.
Yeah, I guess that is a better term for what I was trying to say, but I'm going to go with spiritual Munchausen's.
I like spiritual Munchausen's way better because it's like, it's not the word gaslighting, but that's literally what she's doing. I mean, she is gaslighting Bobby, she's gaslighting the kids.
That's
and like
the thing now where everybody comes up, like people come up with one word to describe a thing and then it immediately gets like perverted and misused a thousand times, whether it's like gaslighting or like emotional labor or like I'm so tired, like those things.
Yeah, it's all very annoying how these words get sucked up into the discourse and then they become like nebulous enough that they can mean so many things. Like gaslighting is basically, if you say someone is accused of gaslighting now, it's basically accusing them of like sexual abuse,
right?
Like, you know, it's like,
or like virtue signaling. Like that was actually like a pretty good description of a thing, and then it immediately got co-opted by all of the worst people in the world.
Yes,
exactly. To apply to virtually anything.
Right, yeah, to apply to anytime anyone says anything that might be construed as liberal or said that they were, you know, literally anything liberal at all or anything left wing is immediately virtue signaling. And it's the same thing with gaslighting. Like literally anyone, like not even lying, just like if you can claim someone is doing something to be manipulative, now it's gaslighting. So it's annoying, but that's what she's doing. She's gaslighting all of them.
Yeah, no, she has spiritual Munchausen's by proxy.
Yes. And she gets on to AIM.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, they have that brand, which is like spiritual gangster, which I always think is funny because I can't imagine like the level of mental illness it would require to want to wear a shirt that says spiritual gangster. But that is basically what Janice is. Like she...
It's real.
Like mental games with everybody, and you know, very like spiritually, she's using gangster tactics constantly.
No, she's like, and she learned from the best, like the fucking OG spiritual gangster, the Catholic Church,
right.
And like, you know, this idea of a spiritual gangster is like, you know, fucking so Protestant, And but really, it's like, no. I like gangster, not as in like person who wears cool clothes. Gangster as in person who murders people.
Yeah, like extortion and protection and rackets.
And gets away with crimes. Like real gangster shit.
Yeah, so gangster methods for a situation that like all she needs to do is just be patient.
Right.
Yeah. Be patient and present with him. That's literally all she has to do. But she'd rather just like
She'd rather make a fake account on AOL and trick his son into thinking there's a ghost in the house or some shit.
Yeah, no, she's like, nah, I can't sit idly by and not engineer a situation in which I scare the kids half to death.
And by the way, like, let's remember what her goal is. It's to get that dick from Bobby Bacala. Yeah.
She's traumatizing these children.
Yeah.
She saw him be sad about his dead wife, and she just decided that I need that dick fucking now, and I don't care how many Bloomin' Onions I have to buy or how many Ouija boards I have to hide in dressers in order to get it.
So she creates this account, Vlad666, and
which I feel like would be an alt-right account now.
Oh yeah, nowadays it would be Vlad1488.
Blaming it on the Russians.
Yeah, right. No, exactly. She basically, she does a Putin, and she Russiagates Bobby Jr.
Yeah, this is a Newark Analytica running a huge scam right now.
Well, I mean, the Bobby Jr. asks, he's like, who are you? And she responds, was it Rising Damp or something?
Yeah, what the fuck was that?
She's like the AOL version of QAnon, where she's
totally
makes the whole like look in this room and
see like I don't buy that AJ would burn calories to be cruel, but I absolutely buy that Janice will burn this many calories in order to do it.
Yeah,
because she is both petty and has made a Christian contemporary album just to see if it might be a worthwhile grift.
Right. Yeah. No, she's a hard fucking worker when it comes to fulfilling whatever petty desire that she currently has.
And it's all sad because it's like she's trying to do this as like a backhanded way to get into the mafia. But like if Tony would make Janice part of his crew, she would be the best earner out of all of them.
I think you're right about that. I've thought about this a lot, and I'm pretty sure you're correct. I also, it's like, because I run against the fact that she's also incredibly lazy, and like she lives her life in order to like stay doing lazy people shit. But at the same time, so does everybody in the mafia. That's literally why you're in the mafia. It's so you get the respect, and so you can hang out in front of Satriel's.
She's that friend that will burn endless calories, but never in the service of like making money or like doing something that's actually productive.
Yeah, she's trying to, she's always trying to find shortcuts, and like the amount of work that she puts in to what she considers to be shortcuts is like insane.
Yeah.
So she says Rising Damp, which we don't know what that fucking means, but you're right. That shit is proto QAnon for sure. Yeah. Like I don't know what that meant. And then, of course, Bobby's kids freak out, and Bobby calls Janice, and Janice comes over to be like, she answers the phone like, oh, nothing. I'm just doing some housework. She's literally smoking weed and listening to music, which is like, I love you, Janice. Like, you're such a piece of shit. And then that's when Bobby, hits her with the, you were right all along.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what to say, Bobby. I came over this afternoon with some pound cake.
I saw her.
I heard them in his room with that Ouija board. I thought, this is not good. But then after the other night, I didn't want to overstep my bounds.
It's bad for them. It's unwholesome.
You want me to go up?
Finally. I had to read to Sophia for like an hour. She couldn't even handle a Nancy Drew. It was too mysterious.
Did you get anything to eat at least? Can I fix you something?
No, it's too much trouble.
No, it's not. I'm starving too. Probably something in here.
Who
Karen's eating. It's the last one she made.
It's a classic example of like Janice being right for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, I mean, she's not wrong in that.
No, like, he needs to eat the fucking ziti and carry on with his life.
But also, it's like, it's wild to me that like she seems to recognize the symbolism of eating the ziti. You know, like eating the baked ziti for her is like basically eating his dead wife. And it's almost like she's been working up towards this exact point. Like she knew as soon as the first time she pulled out that ziti and he was like, I'm not going to eat that. That's Karen's ziti. It's the last one she made. Like she knew at that point, like all I have to do is work him up to the point in which this motherfucker will eat this ziti and he is mine. And, you know, it's fucking, you know, she did great. She did a great job. She got what she wanted.
And all of Bobby's emotions manifest themselves through food. Like, it's like he buries the cake. He eats the ziti. He can't eat the bloomin' onion. Like, he does not have an emotion that's not manifested through food somehow.
Yeah. No, Bobby, you know, that's how he expresses his feelings. It's through what food he eats. And, you know, he fucking ate the ziti. And now it's like eating Karen's soul. And fucking God, you know, Janice just, she gets what she wants in the most disgusting ways. And you just have to be impressed with it.
Yeah.
She's impressively sociopathic. And the final storyline that we're going to talk about is Tony's. Now, this episode starts out with a dream. Tony has a dream where he's in a car. And Gloria's next to him, and Carm is driving, and then fucking Ralphie is in front. His bald head has a caterpillar on it, but then he turns and he sees that Gloria's turned into Svetlana, and that Ralphie's fucking butterfly has, or a caterpillar has turned into like a moth or a butterfly. And then they're playing the radio, and people are screaming and getting shot up, which was wild. And then
definitely this has got to be like the biggest swing they've taken on a dream sequence up until this point, probably.
Yeah, I mean, it felt, I think, the most like a dream of most of like all the dream sequences that have been on The Sopranos, like really kind of like trippy and also, I don't know, banging you over the head with dumb metaphors. And I think they did a good job with it because of the fact that it ends up with Tony immediately in Melfi's office talking about the dream and just being like, cut to the chase. What the fuck does any of this mean? And I love it because like I feel like, again, this show is as bored with the format of, you know, Tony in therapy discussing, you know, the plot of the episode. It's as bored as with it as we are. And so I don't know. I feel like that really comes through in like Tony's kind of constant complaining about it. And I have a clip of him talking about his dream.
Okay. Your wife, your mistress, a business associate, you.
Well, my wife driving, which if my father were alive, he wouldn't have stood for 2 fucking seconds. Men in the front, wives in the back.
You like that arrangement?
Actually, I think the wife should ride in a little cart behind the car, like in the cartoons. Like behind Noah's Ark, there's a little boat with the skunks.
So wives are skunks.
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ. It's a fucking joke. Does it have to be like a cancer hospital in here? Jesus Christ, the money I've been dropping in here. I could have bought a fucking Ferrari.
Can I just compare my wife to a skunk in peace without you analyzing it?
I mean, I think to be honest, it's fair because I feel like Melfi does this every time. And it's like,
her job.
Yeah, you know, yeah, you, no, I know, but it's like, you know who he is. Yes, yeah. You know that wives are skunks, right? Like, why you say this like he's not going to, like, as if he's going to learn from anything.
Yeah.
He's not going to learn, like, oh, I never realized the misogyny implicit in calling women skunks. And it's like, no, he's going to be like, I'm joking. They're breaking balls over here. like he's never once been, like, introspective on the use of his language towards women. it's always a joke, or it's always, you know, like excusable in some way. So she kind of just like, I don't know, she needles at him in these ways that I feel like are not useful for therapy. But that's just my opinion.
This is the only scene where I took Tony's side over Dr. Melfi, where it's like, look,
yes,
it's been 4 years. $300 a week. Like, he has a point. Come on. Like,
yeah, he does.
Ferrari. At least I would have got a blowjob out of that.
What do you mean?
Don't get me started.
I think you're glossing over the significant accomplishments we've made in here.
Oh, my mother would come when she looked at a pot roast. Oh, you're second in the birthing order. Oh, Carmela's driving the car. How fucking interesting.
Just ripping on all of the previous scenes of therapy in the show.
I know, and I love it because I feel like that's how I feel about it. Like, you know, like, she's talking about, like, think of all you've accomplished in here. And he's like, I learned that my mother comes when she saw a pot roast. I learned that, you know, fucking, basically, he learned that he sees meat and faints. You know, it's like he hasn't really learned all that much. It's because the point of the therapy scenes is to get for the audience to get insight into this character. You know, it's not. And so it's almost like a, I don't know, it almost feels like a meta joke that the writers are doing about the therapy scenes. Maybe that's just me, but I love that he is getting tired of this premise of an entire show. So just Tony speaks with Zach and Carmine about the HUD split.
Then he's fighting with New York about the HUD split, which is partly like his backhanded way of sort of blaming them for killing Ralphie so that he doesn't get blamed for it.
Right.
But also, like, I like that this ends with him going to Florida to have, like, a sit-down with Carmine Jr., which just goes to show that, like, useless meetings also happen in the mob world. Like,
I do love that. I love that, like, you know, no matter what line of business you're in, you know, whether it's advertising or you're working in the mafia, you're going to have to fucking go to long, boring. Like, I
gotta go all the way to Florida to see Carmine Jr.'s son to see if he can convince his dad to do a thing that Tony doesn't actually want him to do in the first place, because his whole goal was to create a crisis in the first place.
Yeah. And not only that, but like, you're not just meeting with anybody. You're meeting with maybe the dumbest motherfucker who has ever walked the earth in see-through socks. Like, little Carmine is such a gift to the Sopranos. And yeah. I don't remember if this is the first time we're seeing him, but he has one of the greatest, you know what he is? He's a walking malapropism corner on this show. You know what I mean?
To mention the Dunning-Kruger effect in action, where he gives you that like impression of confidence and like he knows what he's talking about. And then he opens his mouth and he's clearly a complete moron.
I have no way of knowing what kind of advice he's getting from Johnny.
Johnny's always usually a voice of moderation. Me and him, we get along good. So with due respect, let's not jump in and blame Johnny.
True, John's a pragmatist, but he's also a greedy motherfucker.
Lives above his head a little.
I am reminded of Louis D. Whatever's finance minister. Does something. He built the chateau. Nicole and I saw it when we went to Paris. It even outshone Versailles, where the king lived. In the end, Louis clapped him in irons.
Just amazing. Louis the whatever's finance minister, the something. It's like that shit is so fucking funny and so perfect.
He read it in some sort of like laws of power book.
And he's getting it mixed up probably with like fucking Man in the Iron Mask. Like this dude. Yeah.
I have an explanation of this from the Wikipedia page, but I know he must have gotten this from some sort of movie or show where they talked about it. But little Carmine puzzles Tony with some talk about Louis the whatever's finance minister, the something, who built a chateau grander than the king's but ended up in prison. This is probably a reference for Nicolas Fouquet, the superintendent of finances for King Louis XIV, who built the famous Chateau de Vaux-le-Vicomte, but was later arrested by the king.
That's what he's talking about specifically. Like that, like you just gotta wonder where he saw it, because you know it's from a fucking movie,
right,
or a TV show,
yeah. And
because that's what, you know, like he to me is the ultimate Sopranos character, someone who truly is only in the mafia because number one he's a fail son, and because number two he really likes fucking like television and movie entertainment, and he's like, you know, of all the characters on TV, these are the most badass ones. You know, it was like for him it was, you know, either that or, you know, becoming a fucking fireman or like a Marvel fucking superhero. Like his ass is just peak stupid, and I love it. But yeah, in this episode, Vic the appraiser gets beat up by both New York and New Jersey, which I appreciate. Vic.
He just wants to decide how much some houses cost and maybe make a little money on the side.
Vic the appraiser sounds like a nickname, but it's just his name.
I love it. Yes. I that's my favorite part about him is like, it's Vic the appraiser. And it's like, no, he's like literally a guy who appraises.
I just want to appraise some houses.
Yeah, I love it. It's so amazing that they gave him a mafia nickname accidentally, and it's just his actual job. Oh, man. Hey, it's Vinny, the podcaster.
It's also clear that nobody knows exactly what appraising is.
No, they don't know.
when they beat him up, they're like, get your appraising shit, start appraising. Nobody knows what he does.
Yeah, and they're not sure what he's supposed to do for them or what he is doing for the other family, but they want to make sure it's done for them too. Just get your appraising shit and start appraising. And it's like, he can do that. it's so brilliant. So they just end up beating up this civilian twice. Meanwhile, in Tony's second scene with Melfi, you know, he finally does it. He pulls the trigger. He breaks up with Melfi.
All to make himself feel better about... It's weird because he has some self-awareness where he's like trying to tell Melfi that he has dumped Svetlana, but then halfway through he decides to come clean and be like, no, actually she jumped me. But then he still goes through with the part where he has to feel better about himself by dumping Melfi.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting because it's like it's so obvious what he's doing here. You know, he's like, we've just come from a scene in which like Svetlana, which I love, by the way, Svetlana gets a brooch that Tony gives to every girl that he breaks up with. And Svetlana basically says, like, you didn't need to do this. We're not breaking up. I don't want to fuck you anymore. And then she's like, oh, Tony says, you know, you can keep the brooch, please. I want you to have it. And he's like, and she's like, yeah, no, I'll keep it. No, mm-hmm. I'm going to sell this shit.
Yeah.
Like, like Tony's masculinity is fucking shrunk down to a little nub, and he has nothing left to do than to, you know, take it out on another woman.
He couldn't
in his
just
life.
Be happy that he fucked the one-legged nurse's friend. He has to
Be happy you fucked her and you get out like scot-free, like you don't have to worry, because usually the reason you have the brooch and shit is because like women want to fucking stay with you, and you have to like fucking, you know, you really have to like beat them off with a stick, almost literally, like with fucking Gloria or with even with like Victoria, who was just like Valentina, who's like hounding him, you know, like this is the one situation where you're getting what you want, which is a girl who's you're gonna fuck once and is gonna be like, okay, I'm done with you. And instead he just like he takes it as a slight against his masculinity. And yeah, as he's explaining to Melfi how he broke up with her, he fucking just he comes clean. And I have a clip of that.
You know what? This is all bullshit. It was she who gave me my walking papers. You believe that?
What I meant was
You know why she didn't want to see me anymore? She said that I was high maintenance. And this is after all the time and all the money and all the fucking Prozac and all the fucking cocksucking motherfucking dream interpretations. And she said she didn't want to prop me up. And it's from abroad that walks around on crutches half the time. Nice, huh?
Do you agree with her characterization of you?
I'm a miserable prick. I've said it since day one.
And you're no longer interested in changing, in finding a way out?
No, I guess not. I'm sorry. I don't want to do this anymore. And you could say that I'm running away, but I've been here longer than I ever thought I'd stay, longer than anybody ever thought I'd stay. And you know what? I get no appreciation for it.
You've shown a lot of courage. I commend you on that.
Well, thank you for the commendation, and adios.
And then he's gone. He's out of her life.
He's gone. Melfi does stops being a character. Two more seasons, no Melfi at all, I assume.
Yeah. Oh, you assume correctly, I'm sure. Yeah, I do love the fact that he's even more offended by Svetlana rejecting him because of the fact that not only is she abroad, but she's abroad with one leg, who said that I would have to prop that she would have to prop me up. And I love that. I love that so much. He is just like, you're a cripple and you should love me because you are weak and I am strong. It's just, fucking Tony, you magnificent demon.
I like how he keeps shitting on the dream interpretations, but like, he's the one who keeps bringing it up.
Yeah. You can talk about whatever you want in here, man.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, he knows that, like, at the end of the day, this is purely based on the fact that, like, he has dug himself into multiple holes with his temper, you know, in this season, and he needs someone to blame for that and blame for the fact that he feels like less of a man. And nothing makes him feel less like a man than going to therapy, you know? So, yeah, he uses this as a, you know, a way to kind of, like, you know, get some agency back, you know, have some like sovereignty over his body and his mind. Yeah. And mostly so that he can be mean to a woman because another woman rejected him. And that's the episode. I would say if I had to pick a favorite scene, it would probably be Little Carmine. Because I love that dumb motherfucker. Johan, do you have a favorite scene in this episode?
It's Little Carmine adjacent, where Tony, they're in Miami, and it's Tony, Beansy, and Little Carmine in the table with the ladies around. Yeah. They're like being entertained. And the scene is one of the ladies sharing a story about she worked as a Minnie Mouse at Disneyland and was trying to smoke, and someone took a picture of her. I just like that. That's like when they're entertaining guests, that's her go-to story.
Yeah.
She worked as Minnie Mouse.
I also like the idea that Beansy has like this Florida trash whore as a stepdaughter.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of perfect Florida too, because she's just so trashy that like her one fucking contribution to the conversation is the fact that like she wanted to smoke and she took out her fucking Minnie Mouse head.
It's
and
Disney. It's Disney adjacent somehow. Like everything.
Yeah, of course it is. Yeah, that's great. Vince, do you have a favorite?
Yeah, I mean, I gotta go. Well, I can't choose. I enjoyed the idea that AJ, the new metalhead, was putting on Coldplay to make out with Devin Pillsbury.
But that was wild.
Yeah, but probably Janice saying how much the sides cost at Outback. That's pretty hard to beat.
Oh yeah, it's wonderful. Gotta love that Outback Steakhouse. I don't really have a least favorite. You know, it's kind of it was all fine to me. I thought it was all very standard. You know,
favorite. I didn't love AJ's seance, really. I don't know. It's fine. I don't entirely buy it, but it's fine.
Yeah.
I don't know if it counts as least favorite, but I don't know. That line where Janice says, what is it? Narcissism is when they when they we think that they care about us or are thinking about us.
Yeah.
I mean, credit to whoever plays Janice, like that actress is incredible.
Oh, she's amazing. She's incredible.
Like, Jesus Christ, how manipulative. Yeah.
She plays that character so well, and it's like it can't be stated enough that like she did it so well that I don't like I see that face and I get angry.
It's like the actress that played the lady that killed Selena.
Yes, Milan, exactly.
It's like, yeah. I don't want to see that actress anymore.
Yeah, it just makes you so mad because she does such a good job at playing the person who killed Selena that you're just like, that actress is the person who killed Selena. Yeah.
It's on site when I see her.
It's on site. If I ever see you at a fucking casting call, it's on site. Overall, if I had to rate this episode, you guys, I think, well, let me do some quick math here. Let's see, 5, carry the 3, divided by pi. I would give it a B+.
All right.
Yeah. Vince, what would you give it?
I give it, that's a tough one. Let me think about this. You know, a lot of good, only a little bit of bad. Yeah, I'm going to go solid B+.
All right. Johan, if you had to rate this episode with a letter grade, what would you give it?
Well, it's a strong performance from Janice, and I like Little Carmine.
Yeah.
The introduction of Little Carmine. So, yeah, I think it's a solid B+.
Solid B+. All right, solid B+s all around, and you know what? Solid A++ episode of the world's only Sopranos podcast, Buy Yourself a Gun. Mm-hmm. Johan Miranda, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Where can people find you on the internet?
Follow me on Twitter or Instagram at Johan Comedy.
Yeah, at Johan Comedy, Twitter or Instagram. And also, once again, you can see him in the Dangerous World of Comedy on Netflix. Thank you guys so much. Before we get out of here, Vince, we have.
Oh, yeah. We got to remind people that next week we're going to be reading mailbag. Oh, no. You already did this at the beginning of the show for some reason, even though this would be a perfectly logical place to say
I
that.
I am assuming that people bow out of the episode 30 minutes in after the Bada B stories. They go, that's the episode. And then they leave. And I want to make sure that they all hear it. But yes, we will be having the mailbag episode next week. It's a two-parter, one for free, one on Patreon.com. And speaking of Patreon, we have 3 new Pod Yourself a Ooh. Shout-out people
you,
to
you
do.
Didn't preload these, right? So I got to come up with – I got to really put on my nickname-given shoes and do it on the fly. I'm doing it
you
live.
You
got
to do this. We're doing it live. You're doing it right off the top. So the first $8 patron is – Sarah Farnbach,
the farm, but we're going to, I call her the barn owl. That's what we call her. Yeah.
All right. Sarah, the barn owl, Farnbach.
Yeah. Barn owl. Hey, it's barn owl's coming over here. Yeah. There she is.
Yeah. That's good.
You can't even hear her wings beating because that would scare the mice away when she tries to eat them.
Don't scare the mice. We got Sarah the Farnbach. I forgot what her name was.
Barn Owl.
Yeah, that's right. Barn Owl. Okay, so next we have Scott Graybell.
Oh, Graybell. Scott, grab him by the pussy. We call him Drumpf.
We call him what?
Drumpf.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. You get him an old Donald Trump nickname.
Yeah,
from the
Covfefe. Old Covfefe Graybell.
Hey, Covfefe Graybell over here. Always trying to grab women by the pussy with the Cheeto hands. Oh, gotta love good Trump jokes.
Uh-huh.
And finally, we have Doc Holland.
Oh, what a good name. We got old Doc Holliday. He's nice. He's your Huckleberry. We'll call him Huckleberry. That's...
I like
old Huckleberry Holland.
It's interesting. I thought you had it at what'd you call him? Doc Holliday. That was very
but that's
good.
Too close to his regular name. We got to give him a nickname.
I guess you're right. Yeah. I like your formula. I get it now. You start with something where it's obvious, and then you do you kind of like you do an extra. You go an extra layer to get that nickname.
Yeah, I do the what's his name Jeff. What's his face in Independence Day?
Yeah,
Goldblum.
Yeah,
I Goldblum that shit.
You Goldblum that shit to eventually get to the word virus, and you're that's just right. like, oh, fuck, that's wild. That's patreon.com/frotcast, F-R-O-T-C-A-S-T. $8 tiers, pod yourself a shout out. And also, for anyone in the $8 tier or above, you know, if you send in a question or a voicemail, we will play it. Unless, of course, literally all of you do it, in which case it's going to take a long time. So maybe. But yeah, anyways, patreon.com/frogcast, frogcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, concerns, which we will try to get to answering next week. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everybody. Thank you again so much for listening. And until next time, don't stop believing. Don't
stop. Yeah.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.